Parihi Ma Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Bottom of 20. So dying while looking at or remembering Krishna carries one to the highest perfection of life. And one should therefore have the Lord before him when he dies or hear the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and thus pass his death to Vaikuntha to act as either the Lord's servant, friend, parent, or fiancé. And so the whole idea is about this remembering about the Lord. And so that will come by practice. It's not that Bhishma Dev, you know, did this at this moment, right? His whole life has been dedicated to this. And so then, therefore, he is able to appreciate and understand. Right? Otherwise, then, it just doesn't quite happen. It may, but you can't really count on it. It means if you want something to happen, you have to practice it. You want to be good at something, you have to practice it. So basically, this thing is the time of death. You have kind of one shot. You can't just say, hey, can we do that over again? You know, you know, like that. Does that make sense? It doesn't quite work like that. It's a matter of that moment is there. And then, yes, you do get another one. Because don't worry, birth, death, old age, disease is there. So yeah, if you do miss it, then there is the end of the next life. So after a great devotee passes from this world and a spiritually surcharged body is offered special respect, the devotees feel separation for the great soul, not for his body. The devotees then feel the Lord within their hearts as they glorify him and carry on with their duties. So notice here is that they're glorifying within the hearts, because we see as what happened is those who were impersonalists, they went quiet like birds, because it's like now he's merged in Brahman, and so that's the perfection, and so everybody goes quiet. But here, then, the devotees carry on, glorifying, right? That's the position. They glorify. So now the body is given special respects, not because they're thinking he's the body, because the body represents where he was, so it's a tirtha. You understand? That's the whole life. Like Vrindavan, Krishna did his pastimes. And Vrindavan, so Vrindavan's special. So then the great devotee, he performed past that within the body, so that body becomes special. Therefore, there's that respect. Right? So it's different from others where the body is what we were feeling, we were relating with and attached to. That's the difference. Right?
Yes.
Okay, so that ends the chapter 10. Chapter 9, not chapter 10. Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwaraka. Srimad Bhagavatam 110.28. Oh friends, just think of his wives, whose hands he's accepted, how they must have undergone vows, baths, fire sacrifices, and perfect worship of the Lord for the universe, of the universe, to constantly relish now the nectar from his lips by kissing. The damsels of Brajabhumi would often faint just by expecting such favors. So we see we're again continuing with this point of like Bhishma is glorifying Arjuna and the gopis, right? That Arjuna is getting this special favor of the Lord. He's reciprocating. He's interacting with him as his charioteer driver. Right? This is very an important aspect. Otherwise, why is it coming again in this chapter? The last chapter was dealing with these things, showing the greatness of Bhishma Dev. You know, in this special relationship between the Lord and one of his devotees. Now, again, this chapter has the same principles. So that, and this is when we're first opening. So what is the point is you can surrender to Krishna, but now what is the effect of surrendering? This reciprocation. Right? This is what's happening. This is what's special. We, you know, take it like for granted. Okay, we take some boga, we offer it to the Lord, we have prasad. Okay, so when we're talking about prasad, okay, you know, we're going to take prasad, or there's prasad for the devotees. Where's the kind of the focal point?
Us.
Us. You understand? You know, we're taking prasad. Where does Bhishmadev put the focus on prasad? You understand? We may or may not have made this connection. Right? Means, what is prasad? The pujari or the devotees prepare something to offer to Krishna. Krishna then accepting that reciprocates that offering, that particular affection. That result of that, that's called prasad. That's the Lord's mercy. Just like it's always said, the Lord's mercy, he was the chariot driver of Arjuna. The Lord's mercy, he's dancing with the gopis. And now, it's being pointed out, by his mercy, now he's accepted the queens of Dwarka as his wives. That's prasad. Right? So we have the tendency to look at prasad. Well, there's us, and yeah, there's some prasad. No, but Bhishmadev left his body thinking of prasad. That mercy of the Lord in the interaction of devotees. So we think of it as a situation. Here's, you know, some, you know, how you say, potato prasad. Like that. Yeah, he's not here. A waste of... Okay. Filling part. Show must go on.
Yes.
So then the point is we're not looking at the reciprocation of the Lord with the devotee. Right? We're looking at the situation of the prasad, not the actual dynamics of the prasad.
Mm.
The Lord's interaction, the qualities that are there, the results gained from that.
Yes.
You understand? That's what's missing. But it's the first stage, of course. We shouldn't be in anxiety. But we should remember it's only a first stage. Otherwise, you take, yeah, prasad, and then like that. As if we've been there, done that. But the point is, okay, been there, but what else is there to do? Like, been there, done that means, yes, okay, now we're finished with looking at it as only sambandha. But we should actually be looking at it, you know, with ourselves, but looking at it, the Lord's relationship with the devotees, the dynamics of the interaction of the qualities of the Abhideya, that love, exchange of love that's there in Prayojana. Yes, then. But otherwise, then we settle back into, you know, where else do you go? This means either you move forward or you move back, right? You only have two. You throw a rock up, it either keeps going or it comes back, right? Does that make sense? So the point is it has to go one way or the other. So if it doesn't go forward, it goes back into back. Then where does it go back to? Yeah, material. At least whatever our conditioning is, that's what it goes back to. So if you're more religious, there might be some more respect. If you're less religious, then it's, you know, how you say, you know, how you say, you sit down to prasad, Om Tat Sat, Hare Krishna, thanks a lot.
Okay. You are that. Thank you very much for that. Thank you very much for that or something.
Yeah, something like that. You know, so, I mean, it goes down, or, you know, Vanchas Prabhu, Vanchas. You know, no obeisances, just Vanchas, you know.
That's a classic.
You know, so it kind of goes down, you know, Pam Ho. Whoever says, please accept my humble obeisances, right?
Yeah.
It's always Pam Ho, you know?
I don't know Pam.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's like when a ship comes in and they see land ho, right? You know, Pam Ho, where's Pam? Is that a good thing? Okay. From the purport, the Lord is always perfect in himself, and thus he has no hankering for himself. He, however, becomes a master, a friend, a son, or a husband to fulfill the intense love of the devotee concerned. Herein, two classes of devotees of the Lord are mentioned in the stage of conjugal love. One is Swakiya, and the other is Parakiya. Both of them are in conjugal love with the personality of Godhead. The queens at Dwarka were Swakiya, or duly married wives. But the damsels of Braja were young friends of the Lord while he was unmarried. The Lord stayed at Vrindavan until the age of 16, and his friendly relations with the neighboring girls were in terms of Parakiya. These girls, as well as the queens, underwent severe penances by taking vows, bathing, and offering sacrifices in the fire, as prescribed in the scriptures. The rites as they are not an end in themselves, nor are fruit of action. Culture of knowledge or perfection in mystic powers ends in themselves. Okay, so neither are the rites the fruit of action or the culture of knowledge or perfection of mystic powers an end in themselves. Right? They are all means to attain the highest stage of sarupa, to render a constitutional transcendental service to the Lord. Each and every living being has his individual position as one of the above-mentioned five different kinds of reciprocating means with the Lord. And in one's pure spiritual form of sarup, the relationship becomes manifest without mundane affinity. The kissing of the Lord, either by his wives or the young girlfriends, who aspire to have the Lord as their fiancé, is not of any mundane perverted quality. Had such things been mundane, a liberated soul like Sukadeva would not have taken the trouble to relish them, nor would Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have been inclined to participate in those subjects after renouncing worldly life. The stage is earned after many lives of penance. So, in other words, it's by service that this is there. It's reciprocation of service. So, in other words, the activities themselves, it's not because they did all these severe penances, vows, bathing, and offering sacrifices in the fire. But it's because they did that to please the Lord that the Lord is happy. Right? That's the whole point. He's done it to please the Lord. And in pleasing the Lord, then it works out very nicely. Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So one always must see this. Otherwise, we get the thing is that people are bathing or offering sacrifice in the fire, taking vows, and they think, oh, that's so fanatic. We just chant Hare Krishna. But the gopis did it. It worked out for them. Right? But they didn't do it as the final point. They simply did it as a means to express. In other words, what is being respected, what he called it? What is being recommended by the scriptures? That is what is being done. So for whatever the age, whatever is recommended, that's what's being done. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because if we say, oh, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care about that. Yeah. And how often did Haridas Thakur eat? How about Raghunath Das Goswami? You know, taking prasad, isn't that fanatic? We just chant Hare Krishna. You know what I'm saying? The Goswamis, they didn't sleep. So isn't sleeping a little fanatic? You know, we just chant Hare Krishna. You know, no, but we're sleeping for the Lord, yes. So that means it's a medium of sleeping. So therefore, you know, why you're getting to that medium instead of chanting? You understand? The knife cuts both ways. You know, so the point is what's recommended for your position, that's what you do. You do that to please the Lord. Then you can get the results like the gopis and the queens of Dwarka are getting. Right? That's the whole point. So it's not a matter of it's a matter of what's authorized. That's the whole point. Because you're trying to please Krishna, so who's authorized? Krishna.
Yes.
That's the whole point. Okay, so here is that we see is that prasad, this is a special point. This is what's being brought out here. Right? That is, and that reciprocation through that medium of service. That's what pleases the Lord, and the Lord responds. That's His mercy, that He responds. That's prasad. Right? That's His mercy. Chapter 10 summarized as questions and answers. Yes?
Can we say that there is some reciprocation even if the right consciousness is not there, and that's actually also mercy?
Yes, of course. It means, because why? It means if you're, let's say the devotee is doing the activity but in the wrong consciousness, but ultimately why is he doing the duty?
Because somewhere he understands.
Yes, somewhere he wants to please. Because if you ask him, he just got distracted. He's thinking about this or that, but actually he wants to please Krishna. Yeah. But the point is it mentions here intense love, right?
Yes.
He becomes a master, friend, or a son, or a husband to feel the intense love of the devotee concerned. So, what is that? Is that intense love?
No.
No. Means there's some aspect of love. That's why you're doing it. But the intensity is somewhere else. We're thinking of, you know, something different. right? You know, what's going to happen for lunch, or this guy said this or that, or should I be doing this? Should I get married, or should I take some yas? You know, so all these different kinds of things. We're thinking of something more intensely than we're doing the service.
So the mercy is that that will intensify.
Yes, the mercy is you get the benefit for whatever is there, because anything that's connected with Krishna is real. So that's good, right? But then, but the point is the degree in which that reciprocation is not on the level like the gopis. It's on the same principle as the gopis, that he, as you surrender, he reciprocates. So if you surrender like they did, he'd reciprocate like that. But we're surrendering not exactly like they're doing. And so we're getting a lesser intensity of reciprocation. It's not that Krishna doesn't want to do more, but it's just that's all that we're doing. You know what I'm saying? How much do you reciprocate with the person that they go by and go, hi, and then keep walking? Right? You can just kind of, yeah, hi, hello. You know, that's it. You know, you can't get into a whole conversation because you're gone.
Pembo.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you get in more, right? Yeah. Maybe that's it. You know, get more in. You know, devotees want more nectar, yeah, yeah, so therefore. Maybe we should have like Kunti's prayers or something condensed down into just a little syllable, you know, the letters, you know, then like that, and it could say the whole thing, and it's full Kunti's prayers. Yeah, that'd be fine. Yeah.
Laura?
Yes.
One time I asked you about when Arjuna was fighting, was he thinking of Krishna, and you said that he wasn't, like, he was doing it for Krishna, but he wasn't, like, spacing out,
He's thinking of the fighting, but it's for Krishna. But the point is he's concentrating on the fighting. That comes up because some will say, you know, if things service is not going well, you know, and the devotee, you know, says, no, but I'm thinking of Krishna, I'm absorbed in Krishna, so, you know, you can't do so well. But the point is, since the service is for Krishna, it has to be done well. Right? Because the point at which it may not be done well as that we see generally, you know, the residents of Braj. You see a few. I think it was, what was that, Brahman? Krishna visited him, he gave the banana peels. Like that. Shutadev, yes. Shutadev. So you have examples where they're so absorbed in the Lord, but they're doing something. So they're concentrating on one aspect at the expense of another, but they're not just meditating on Krishna and then doing nothing. Doesn't say when Krishna blew his flute, then all the gopis sat down in their houses, wherever they were, whether they were serving the prasadam, you know, to their relatives, whether they were, you know, taking a bath, or whether they were taking care of the children, they just sat down at that very spot and meditated upon Krishna and became fully absorbed in him. Right? Does it say that? No. Okay. So that's the point. It's not that kind of meditation. But the point is you're meditating upon it to do it nicely for Krishna. So because it's being done for Krishna, it's not just a skill. See, because we think, well, if I focus on it, I'm only focusing on the skill because that's what we're trained at. That's what we've been trained to do, right? You go to all the schooling that one does. Everybody tells you it's just to do the skill so you can focus on it. Right? No one's talking about doing that skill because it will please somebody.
But my question is more like, how is that different to, for example, thinking of what prasadam's there or what, whether to take sannyas, because you're thinking of those things for Krishna also.
Because you're not thinking of, you're not doing the skill so well, necessarily. If you're so expert at it, but then the mood, then you have to add the mood, because the point is which is the medium? The thinking of taking sannyasa, getting married, or the deity, the artik?
Yeah.
You understand? So, in other words, whatever's going on, you should be focusing there. Otherwise, why do the artik? Just sit down and think about that.
Okay, yeah.
You know? Yeah. Okay, question 15 of Srimad Bhagavatam was asked by Shonaka Rishi to Suta Goswami, Srimad Bhagavatam 110.1. After killing his enemies who desired to usurp his rightful inheritance, how did the greatest of all religious men, Maharaj Yudhishthira, assisted by his brothers, rule his subjects? Surely he could not truly enjoy his kingdom with unrestricted consciousness. Answer, Sutta Goswami gives this principal answer to question 15 in verse 2. Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the maintainer of the world, became pleased after reestablishing Maharaj Yudhishthira in his own kingdom and after restoring the Kuru dynasty, which had been exhausted by the bamboo fire of anger. Right? Well, bamboo fires, because the bamboo in the wind, it rubs, right? And then from that you can get fire. So it comes from interaction that's not so smooth. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains the philosophical significance of this answer. In the material world, the wrath of those who want to lord it over material nature interacts, and the fire of war takes place, exhausting the unwanted population. Such fires or wars take place, and the Lord has nothing to do with them. But because he wants to maintain the creation, he desires the mass of people to follow the right path of self-realization, which enables the living beings to enter into the kingdom of God. The Lord wants the suffering human beings to come back home, back to him, and cease to suffer the threefold material pains. The whole plan of creation is made in that way, and one who does not come to his senses suffers in the material world by pangs inflicted by the illusory energy of the Lord. The Lord therefore wants his bona fide representative to rule the world. Lord Sri Krishna descended to establish this sort of regime and to kill the unwanted persons who have nothing to do with his plan. Right? Because the plan is self-realization. So in other words, the persons on the battle, they're not assisting in self-realization. Right? That's the whole point. So then by removing that aspect, then things become better. Just like Jarasandha, he came. Krishna could have killed Jarasandha in the first time he attacked, Mathura. In fact, he could have gone out, just challenged him to a fight, killed him. Right? Then the Akshahini of soldiers would have just gone home. But they're also part of the problem. Right? And there's 17 more Akshahinis of those kind of persons who are a problem, still remaining. So don't kill Jarasandha. He goes back, brings another Akshahini, kill them, then another, and then at the end, then you can kill him.
Right? You understand? He's actually helping out.
Yeah. So it's just, in other words, what he'll do. That's the whole thing. And by that you get your plan done. Like I remember it was something to do with when they wanted to take care of the Tsar of Russia, and his immediate family. So they had a room, and they took chairs and they placed them in a particular way. And then they had already worked out who was going to shoot who. And then when they led the king and the queen and his, family into the room, they would, by protocol, exactly sit in that certain fit, because the chairs were put in the formality of how they would sit. And then they all stood like that, so the people who are going to shoot them know exactly where they're going to be. You understand? So you know exactly what's going to happen. So the thing is, people work by the modes of nature. So therefore, then they either take part directly in the plan, or they're having to be removed. So the plan is, people get the opportunity to be absorbed in God consciousness, to elevate their life. Otherwise, animal life is already going on with the animals. We don't need 7 billion more people doing animal stuff. Especially because they don't do it so well. They say animals, right? Means you go into an area of the world, let's say, where no man has gone before, right? And so having gone there, then you find that those animals have been there. There's millions of generations have gone on, and the forest is in a perfectly good shape. Man goes into the same place, and in one generation, two generations, maximum three, he's already, completely wiped it out. And then you have to go into another place that man has never met before. Yes. Right? After a while, you run out of them. Yes.
And then they become even more exciting.
Yes. So then the jungles move to the cities, right? Then there's cement jungles, right? So the difficulty comes up is that the plan is humans should elevate themselves and take care of everybody else. In other words, the humans can take care of the natural resources, at the same time not disturb all the animals, because the animals are humans who didn't use their life for spiritual realization. right? So now they have to spend that time there, so they have to be able to live as an animal, right? If you're supposed to be 10 lifetimes as this particular animal, you require a habitat, right? If that habitat's not there anymore and your species goes extinct, that means you have to transfer to another time, another universe to find a spot. That's a big trouble, right? You know, just leave it alone and then they can live there. Does that make sense? And so then from there, they elevate themselves up to human life. Human life is going according to spiritual standards. And so then that life, then instead of getting distracted and becoming again an animal, they become devotionally situated. Yeah? Okay. The Battle of Kurukshetra was fought according to the plan of the Lord so that undesirable persons can get out of the world and a peaceful kingdom under his devotee could be established. The Lord was therefore fully satisfied when King Yudhishthira was on the throne and the seedling of the dynasty of Kuru in the person of Maharaj Prigit was saved. Right? So then, you know, this is all part of the plan of the Lord. In verses 3 through 7, Suta Goswami adds details to his principal answer. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 10th chapter describes how Krishna, after enthroning the Pandavas in the kingdom without obstacles, leaves for Dwaraka and was praised by the Yadavas. Shonaka's questions about Sutta, about Yudhishthira's rule of the kingdom after the Kurukshetra battle, and Suta Goswami answers by describing the wonderful world situation created by Yudhishthira's reign. Sukadeva then narrates Krishna's departure from Hastinapur to Dwarka and describes the expressions of affection by the residents, especially the ladies of Hastinapura, who offer their prayers as the Lord leaves. The ladies appreciate their fortune in seeing the Lord and creator of the universe. Krishna, who is usually only seen by great pure devotees and who mercifully descends to the material world at different ages, 21 through 25. The ladies then describe the glories of the land in which Krishna descends, as well as the great fortune of the wives of Krishna, who so intimately relate with him, 26 to 30. The Lord accepts the prayers of the ladies and leaves Hastinapur for Dwarka, 31 to 36. Shloka Anusharani. Summary of the verses. Verses 1 to 6, Suta Goswami describes a wonderful world situation created by the reign of Yudhishthira. Verses 7 to 20, Krishna departs for Dwarka. Verses 21 to 30, the prayers of the ladies of Hastinapur. 31 to 36, the Lord accepts the prayers and leaves Hastinapur for Dwarka. Verses 1 to 6. Suta Goswami describes the wonderful world situation created by the reign of Yudhishthira. Shaunaka Muni asked, after killing his enemies who desired to usurp his rightful inheritance, how did the greatest of all religious men, Maharaj Yudhishthira, assisted by his brothers, rule his subjects? Surely he could not freely enjoy his kingdom with unrestricted consciousness. Verse 1. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, since it was mentioned in a general way that with the agreement of Krishna, the Pandavas ruled the kingdom, the inquisitive sages ask about this. The enemies desired his wealth. They obtained it, and then he took it back from them and was able to enjoy it. Srila Prabhupada explains, Maharaj Yudhishthira was the greatest of all men of religion. Thus he was not at all inclined to fight with his cousin for the sake of enjoying the kingdom. He fought for the right cause because the kingdom of Hastinapur was his rightful inheritance, and his cousins wanted to usurp it for themselves. He fought, therefore, for the right cause under the guidance of Lord Sri Krishna. But he could not enjoy the results of his victory because his cousins were all killed in the fight. He therefore ruled over the kingdom as a matter of duty, assisted by his younger brothers. The inquiry was important for Shonaka Rishi, who wanted to know about the behavior of Maharaj Yudhishthira when he was at ease to enjoy the kingdom. So, in other words, it looks the same as if he was fighting to get the kingdom for himself. But it's not. He's doing it to perform duties. Right? An important element is that the right thing to do is in the mode of goodness. The right thing to do are one's prescribed duties, right? And the fun part is the prescribed duties are the only thing that's going to get you the results you want to enjoy, right? So therefore, people who do things in the mode of passion still have to do the right thing, but they're doing it because it's for themselves, Well, Maharaj Yudhishthira is doing it because it will please Krishna. Yes.
It seems sometimes it's possible to see if people are working with detachment or attachment, because it works nicer. So when we say that, the activity might be the same, but it would be possible to see, wouldn't it?
Yes, basically. Mm-hmm. It means if that kind of training experience is there, you can see. But it doesn't matter which the position, if it is being done because of their own consideration, but they're willing to connect it to Krishna, then that's the focus. Because by performing the activity nicely, offering the results to Krishna, one gets purified. And they will naturally come to the position where you're doing it to please Krishna. So it'll naturally move from renunciation to sannyas. So in other words, the focus is on karma yoga. And then with time, it's on that naishkarmya aspect and then to pure devotion. Because naishkarmya, I'm doing my duty, I shouldn't do it with attachment, I should do it with detachment. But it's not about attachment and detachment. It's about pleasing Krishna. Like the gopis, they're doing their activities with attachment for Krishna. Right? Because we're attached to the wrong thing, that's why we talk about detachment's important.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, let's say you have a bunch of children, they're always doing the right thing. Do you have to talk about avoiding bad stuff?
No.
Right, you told them, and then you don't have it. Now the ones that always do stuff and wrong, right? You know, you have to regularly remind that. Is that
so? Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So, sorry, just to clarify, I'm really sorry. So, it's okay to be attached to, if it's the right thing, if you're doing the right thing, that's okay.
No, it's all right to be attached to Krishna.
Yeah, but doing the right thing for Krishna.
No, attached to Krishna.
Okay, not the right thing.
No, it's attached to Krishna. Then, since it's for Krishna, then you should do the right thing. See, if it's for yourself, you might do the right thing, you might do the wrong thing. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people do the wrong thing for themselves.
You know what I'm saying? Free.
You know, like India following the West. That's doing the wrong thing for themselves. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, the principle is that you don't require the... How you say, to get love of God, it's not about what you're doing, it's that you're doing it for Krishna, right? But to do something, so how are you going to express that you want to please Krishna? You have to do something, right? We're starting from the end there. Krishna says give the results, okay? So I'm giving the results to Krishna. So, but giving the results means I have to perform the activities that gets the results. Let's say I want to make a nice lunch offering for Krishna, right? And so therefore I will go into the living room and hang that picture that I haven't, you know, been procrastinating about for the last 3 weeks. Right? But it was service to Krishna. It was a picture of Krishna. Nice picture, you know, Krishna and Jashoda and everything. It was really nice. So did I get the results?
No.
So you have to do the results that are actually connected with the activity is actually connected with the results. Okay? So that means it has to be the right activity. So it defines the right activity, the shastra. So then doing the right activity, that's the mode of goodness. Right? But to do that means then how do you do that activity? You have to have the knowledge of the skill and your position as servant. Right, so you start with prayojana, then you move back to the avideya, the activity. Then you move back from there to the relationship. So you start with the goal, because working out all the other things is very technical, right? Sambandhijnana is more technical, the skill is more technical. So that means anybody can, from the beginning, immediately give the results to Krishna and start getting spiritual benefit, even if they don't understand all the technicality of how the whole process works. Right? But by as you become purified, the knowledge and detachment come. So then the qualification to do it on a higher, better platform comes automatically. In other words, by performing, giving the result to Krishna, it nourishes the whole process of understanding I'm servant of Krishna. Because if I'm servant of Krishna, I have to be detached from the concept that I am the Lord Master of, you know, whatever I can survey and beyond. Right? You know. You know, I throw in beyond because just in case. Right? Is that, you know? So then you can see that. So you have that knowledge and you have that detachment to apply the knowledge. Because even if you have the knowledge, how detached are you? Are they? Right? Does that make sense? Like in India, they have the knowledge of what is the Shastra and what should be done. But who's doing it? You know what I'm saying? It's not being done. So that's the point. You can have the knowledge, but then you don't have the character, the qualification to do it. Does that make sense? In other words, if someone has knowledge but is not able to apply it, it means they lack character. Do you understand? Does that make sense? You know, so before, people had knowledge of the Gita. They would follow it. That meant they had character. But as Kali Yuga goes, the character drops, so they have knowledge, but they can't follow it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, here is then the aspect where then we want to give that result to Krishna. So in giving that result to Krishna, then by practice, naturally the karma comes out. Right? But now, in the beginning, if there's the mode of passion is there, then it will be karma yoga. It's our activity, our results. But because we want good results for ourselves and for Krishna, therefore we'll do the right activity. Right? And then we'll get the results. So it's supported by Shastra. You know, it's pious, but the attitude's wrong. But ultimately the attitude, because you're giving it to Krishna, then it has that devotional element. Though there's the mixes there. So one will get the devotional benefit, and at the same time one will get harassed by the material energy for your material desire. So you're doing, let's say, the person who wants to be the manager. You know, so then he is, but if there's some material desire, he will be the manager, and he's doing it for Krishna, so he's spiritually advancing, but at the same time he's getting so much emotional and physical trouble because of it also. And it bothers him. Why? Because that's the mixed part. But as he gives it up, it's not that their troubles won't be there, but it won't bother him. And it's just part of what was there. Just like the mother taking care of the child, it's not a botheration. You know what I'm saying? Oh, sorry. Wrong example. Sorry. Okay. I'm not sure which area, you know. So, therefore, for the mechanic, putting the carburetor on the car, changing the tire, is not a problem. Does that work better? Okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So now Shauna Karisi want to know about the behavior. So that's the whole point is now what did he do? Because if it's a matter of he can't enjoy the kingdom, now would he have not run the kingdom? Right? Because that's how Arjuna opened the Gita. He's not going to enjoy it, therefore why fight? Right? So now, is Yudhishthira in that same position? Because we see as before in the pastime of the Bhagavatam, the previous chapter, Yudhishthira was in that position. But now we see is that Krishna installs him on the throne and everything goes nicely. So he, by character, he's doing it because he's supposed to do it. Yeah, and that will please Krishna. Because it's Krishna's plan. Right? He wants good people to do good things, you know, so that people can become God conscious. So that's the thing. Because otherwise, then he might have also just lamented or told one of his brothers to be king or something like that. But that would have been the mode of ignorance, because it would have been about himself. Right? So that's why Gita was spoken, and that's why Bhishmadeva gave his instructions, to remove that kind of ignorance so that one would be situated in doing your duties properly to please Krishna. Yes?
Maharaj, how to develop good character so we can apply the knowledge that we get?
In devotion, means to gain good character, then we are aware of it, that good character is of value, but we gain it by performance of devotional service. There's no separate endeavor. In other words, all the good qualities you require are required in devotional service. So if you practice devotional service, you have to practice having that good character. You know what I'm saying? You don't have some other practice. You know, that's why for the devotee, there's nothing separate than devotional service. So all those technical points apply within devotional service. So we think, oh, because we do devotion, we don't have to worry about it. No, but you have to worry that those things are going on. Right? You're doing your service. Are you dealing nicely with the Vaishnavas? You know, are you dealing in a way that's detached, means for yourself, but you want the results nicely for Krishna, therefore it's in the mode of goodness. Like, if I'm detached, but I don't want the results, so I don't work that hard to get it because, you know, it doesn't matter. That's the mode of passion. Right? In other words, giving up something because of the trouble it is, that's the mode of passion. Right? Giving something up because that's your duty, that's the mode of goodness. Giving up something that you're supposed to do, that's the mode of ignorance. Right? So does that make sense? That's why those technical things are giving in the last chapter of Gita. So we understand the techniques of how to apply those. So that kind of technical thing is good for us, and, you know, as we go through. Because this whole first canto, we haven't introduced actually more than that. We've introduced now the emphasis on pure devotional service. Right? Because Gita's given all the background and the technique and has indicated pure devotional service. Now the Bhagavatam, this whole first canto, is continuing with that. Right? So that you appreciate that that's what it is. In other words, how big the Gita is, that's how big the first canto is, to tell you now it's all, doing all that in pure devotional service. Right? Then we'll introduce more refinement of the technique. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So kind of good character, if I develop the qualities of goodness?
They are the qualities of goodness, that's how we'll define them. But they're only important because of their connection to Krishna in pure goodness. Right? If they're connected to Krishna, it's pure goodness. Having them on their own is not so important. You know, the smartest, they have good qualities. You deal with them and all that, then they, you know what I'm saying? You come into their house, you don't know how to behave, they're very tolerant. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're saying things and, you know, you cut in and like that. They're tolerant. They wait, they say the right thing. They follow all the etiquettes. Even though they're not devotees, because they have those qualities. Right? And that's why they stick to themselves, because others don't have the qualities, and so it's really hard to interact with them. Right? So if others had those qualities, it's not a problem in interacting. You understand? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like dock workers hang out with dock workers because you can just speak freely and there's no problem. You know, and if it gets a little out of hand, you have a bit of a fight and hey, it was all good fun. You know?
It's like borrowed qualities versus given qualities, which you earlier said.
Yes, it's still the Lord's qualities, of course. So the devotees gate those qualities because they by doing devotional service they become their qualities. But if they're not connected to Krishna, your conditioning may have the qualities, but as pointed out, Prabhu said, they're borrowed qualities, they're not yours. Does that make sense? That's the difference. So, in other words, the technique stays the same. It's just applied within devotional service. So, but it's one of those things that we take it that, okay, it says, you know, there's no need of separate endeavor. We just do devotional service. So therefore, I don't even worry about them. I just do my service. But why did Prabhupada go to the trouble to explain it unless it's something to see that you're doing within your devotional service? But it's not about those things. It's about the devotional service. This is the fine point. Oh, if we're going to worry about it, it's about that. No, it's not about that. It's about Krishna. So we're not used to this. We're not used to things are a medium for personal dealings. We're used to things are a way of creating a situation in which I enjoy. Right? And people are, you know, animate things that you just have to be more careful with. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you drop your shoes, they don't complain. They don't call you an idiot. You know what I'm saying? So that's it. Just people are, you know, like shoes, but they talk, you know, they like this. So.
Love things and use people.
Huh? Love things and use people, yes. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So is it a matter of self-reflecting and then trying to be kind of aware and conscious of how you're interacting with the different devotees?
Yes, yes. It's just a matter, if you reflect, then you will, with time, you'll start to match that reflection with the activity. Right? The tendency is we don't match the reflection with the activity. We do the activity, and then generally there's not reflection. But from hearing, then there's reflection. That's the point of manana. Right? We're already doing what we're doing. Then from shravana we hear. Okay? Then if we reflect upon that, that's manana. Then when we go to apply our regular activity or a new activity you've heard about, it should be according to that reflection. Then the problem is that we may be good at that, or we may just hardly, or apply it. So then we do. Then we reflect again. Then so we keep doing that until the reflection and the activity become connected. Right? That gives realization. But then once you get to realization, then that remains. That stays. Does that make sense? So it's a sadhana. It's a practice. So we're aware of it, but it's not separate. That's the point. Is that it's not focused upon, it's secondary, but secondary doesn't mean it's not important. Right? Just like, let's say I want to cook, right? I have to light the fire. So lighting the fire is a secondary point. The cooking is that, but if I don't light the fire, then the primary doesn't happen. Right? But then I can't take it. See, without the lighting the fire, no cooking could go on, so lighting the fire is just the main thing. People do that. It's called money. Right? Well, you can't do anything without money, therefore money is the most important thing. That's the bourgeois culture. And so because of that, then your spiritual, your knowledge, your administrative, your good qualities all gets put on the side because it's about money. Because, you don't require good qualities to get money. Right? It means if you do, you get more. But you can get some without any qualities. Right, therefore, second-hand car salesman. otherwise, then, how you say? What do you call it? Repo men. Right, there's all kinds of activities that they don't require. In fact, the less qualities you have, the better. Have you ever heard of a conscientious repo man?
No,
you can't. It just doesn't work.
Rasabas.
Yeah, Rasabas. Yes. Does that make sense? So then the devotee, because he's doing for Krishna, then all these nice qualities develop, then they're able to do these very well. Right? So that with that realization, then your activity goes even better. Right? You understand more of what you've heard. Does that make sense?
And maybe we have to pray because our condition is...
Yes, praying is always recommended. Because the point is it is mercy of Krishna anyway. It's not because I did it, therefore I have to get the result. Right? The prayer is very important. Like we see Bhishma Dev is praying. Though he's the acharya in doing what he's doing, but he's still praying. Sutta Goswami said, Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the maintainer of the world, became pleased after re-establishing Maharaj Yudhishthira in his own kingdom, and after restoring the Kuru dynasty, which had been exhausted by the bamboo fire of anger. Maharaj Yudhishthira, after being enlightened by what was spoken by Bhishma Dev and Lord Sri Krishna, the infallible, engaged himself in matters of perfect knowledge because all his misgivings were eradicated. Right? Because misgivings means the mind gets in the way.
Yeah.
Right? Doubt means the intelligence can't work it out. The misgiving means you can tell what's what, but you don't want to accept it.
Yes.
Right? Or you can't even tell what's what because the mind won't even accept the premise that there is alternative. Thus he ruled over the earth and seas and was followed by his younger brothers, right? Earth and seas, that means the whole planet. Because it mentions seven continents and seven seas, so just like now. The only difference is what we said, Oceania is counted as the seventh continent as opposed to Antarctica. Right? A block of ice, why should that be a continent? And why not the North Pole, right?
Yes.
It still remains a block of ice. Why doesn't it get there? Because there's supposed to be seven, right? Not yet. During the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthira, the clouds showered all the water that people needed, and the earth produced all the necessities of man in profusion. Due to its fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. There'd be so much there, the ground is even becoming moistened. Right? The rivers, oceans, hills, mountains, forests, creepers, and active drugs in every season paid their tax quota to the king in profusion. So even Bhumi Devi is because he's protecting the earth. The king protects the earth. So then she gives tax. Right? So that was the point. One may say, why did Prithu go and chastise the earth? Because he's protecting her, but she's not paying the tax. Right? So therefore he went that she had to pay the tax. Because of the king's having no enemy, the living beings were not at any time disturbed by mental agonies, diseases, or excessive heat or cold. So that's why then, I guess, there couldn't have been Antarctica, because if there's not excessive heat or cold, there wouldn't have been any Antarctica, right?
That's true, yes.
Srila Prabhupada writes, since Maharaj Yudhishthira was under the protection of the Ajita, the infallible Lord, as above mentioned, the properties of the Lord, namely the rivers, oceans, hills, forests, etc., were all pleased, and they used to supply their respective quota of taxes to the king. But in other words, the king is a devotee, so they're pleased because they work under the Lord. They work under the Lord's laws. So the king is following those laws to please the Lord. Naturally, they're pleased. The secret to success is to take refuge under the protection of the Supreme Lord. Without his sanction, nothing can be possible. To make economic development by our own endeavors on the strength of tools and machinery is not all in all. Okay. The sanction of the Supreme Lord must be there. Otherwise, despite all instrumental arrangements, everything will be unsuccessful. So the instrumental arrangements, the instrument's always there. See, because we're used to subject and object. I'm the controller and enjoyer. But the point is we're not. We're actually an instrumental. So we use all the facilities as the instrumental, but because we identify with it, we take it as us. It's the main thing. It's the subject, it's the object. But the instrumental means that it's being used for the Lord, right? It's being used in connection with the Lord.
Yes.
So if we see like that, then we can see how these secondary aspects are not the primary. The primary is the Lord interact with the devotee, then in that activity, the tools of that activity is the instrumental, the secondary. The ultimate cause of success is the Daiva, the Supreme. Because that's Yudhishthira Maharaj points out, is you have focus, right? So that means to be focused, you have to have knowledge and skill, right? Then you make the endeavor, you apply that knowledge and skill with that focus. Then you depend upon the Lord, Daiva, for the results. Because we don't produce the results. We're not the material cause, right? But the Lord is both the efficient and the material cause. So we can be an instrument in the efficient cause. But the material cause, that's also under the guidance of the Lord, and that will then produce the results. We're not the one doing it. You know, we may think so, but it doesn't seem to always work out. But the control of the Lord is everywhere, and if the Lord is pleased, every part of nature will be pleased. The artificial way of living, depending upon factories and tools, can render so-called happiness only to a limited number at the cost of millions. Right? So that's the actual position. But it's not discussed, really, right? You know, if it is discussed, it's pushed over into it. You know, it's a conspiracy theory or something like that, and everyone will think the guy's an idiot. Right? That's the importance of having conspiracy theories, is that therefore people will think that the conspiracy is an idiot, is foolish, right? Since the energy of the mass of people is engaged in factory production, the natural products are being hampered, and for this, the mass is unhappy, right? Because if you're in factory production, yes. Who's getting the raw materials? Factory means you've already got raw materials. Yes. You have to process them. So everybody's doing there. So then how will nature be? It's not growing. It means who's taking care of the farms? Who's taking care of the forests? Like we said, you cut down a tree, you have to plant trees.
Yeah.
You know, you have to take care of the things. You know, you're taking something, you have to replace it. It's supposed to be sustainable.
It's not.
It's not, because of this focus on the factory.
So if there was enough manpower prepared to stay on the farms, then they would be more productive. It's just they're restricted because they're just...
Yeah, in other words, because if there's more productive, then life will be easier for people. Right? You don't want life too easy. You know, so you know, then people don't work so hard. If they don't work so hard, then those few that it mentions don't have their lifestyle. You know, the point is, but from the natural lifestyle, you can have it. The point is, why should there be factories and stuff? Why should there be these artificial things that are the element of production? Right? It's not that production doesn't happen, but it doesn't need to be artificial production. Right? You take some wood and metal and you make a carriage. Right? You know? And so, you know, he has a 4-horsepower car. Like Indra has a, I think it's 10,000-horsepower chariot. Now, you know, nobody gets close to that. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, you know, this is what you can do. You can take the natural and produce these things. Because the point is this, when we go to if you go to a museum, you know, who wants to see, you know, these particular manufactured things in this way? It's not craft. You know, you don't mind looking at a handmade watch that's 200 years old that still works. You know what I'm saying? These kind of things. Then you're taking something, and man, by his skill, is making it. Factories, the problem, there's no skill, hardly. It's being mass-produced. When it's being handmade, then having that means it's special. Because nowadays, it's like, you know, what else? Everybody has the same thing, you know? Everybody has a smartphone. You know, even the rickshaw wall out here on the road's got one. You know, so I'm saying, so what's the uniqueness? What's the specialness? But before, things were handmade. So to have that was special. Right? You know, so is it like those, what is it? It means it doesn't do much, but like those Fabergé eggs. Like, I mean, who makes them? Right? You know, so if you have one of those, that's special.
Yes. It's actually the consciousness that goes into the product that's the value.
Otherwise, how do you get such fine work? You know, so there's so much, the difficulty comes up is it's not the actual wealth. It's not real wealth. Because after a few months, you know, you get a computer and it's worth, you know, thousands. But after a few months, it's only worth a few hundred. So what real value is it? Well, before is you get it and it gets more. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. You get a modern rug, and once you've used it in your house a bit, it's an old rug. That you get these Persian rugs, as they call them, the Oriental rugs. They get more valuable with time if you take care of them. Whatever it was worth when you bought it, it's worth more later, because they get better as they get older. Because when they first make it, they've got all, because you clip it and that's got little bits of the rug inside. You mean the little fur. So every day you brush it, you know, in the proper way. And it gets better and better. The colors become clearer and clearer. You know, so it gets more and more valuable. You know, so that's the thing. So previously, everything of wealth was an investment. There was no loss. Nowadays, everything that you buy basically is a loss. You know, because even you can't guarantee land will be. You know. So it's just like, you know, it's just like go through, it's the top thing, and then eventually people start moving in and it diversifies and then the rent goes down until it becomes a slum, right? And then after it's a total slum, then the developer comes in, buys the whole thing for cheap, then builds some fancy thing, and then the prices go up again. But you can't guarantee that that's all going to happen in your lifetime, you know, or when it's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Because I remember seeing like in the Lower East Side in New York, you know, the area where Prabhupada was. So that was like one of the cheapest areas in New York before, because it's just slums, bums living there. But if you look at the architecture, it's really, really fancy. Because before, at one time, it was a really high-grade neighborhood. You know. So then the problem comes is that it just goes through these stages. So there's no real meaning to these things. You know, so it's artificial. That's what Prabhupada's talking about. So if you connect it to the Lord, then you can start to reduce and control that artificialness. But then it starts to work in its natural position.
So land and cows,
yes,
used properly,
yes,
not just sitting there in an investment, then they'll actually produce satisfaction of life.
Yes, because there's so much land is not being used. You just take a train through India, drive through anywhere in the world, you just see land just sitting there. Like that. Just like that. Okay, since the energy of the mass of people is engaged in factory production, the natural products are being hampered. And for this, the mass is unhappy. The basic principle of economic development is centered on land and cows. Because we saw is that it started, it may have started before, but it came prominent in the 50s, that if it was man-made, it was better than natural. Like, it used to be that pure cotton was cheaper than synthetic. Like that. Anything that was man-made was more expensive. You know, in the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, they started catching on, well, maybe not so much, but I think it was until the 90s that then the organic was figured out. You can make money off of that. So therefore, now organic and natural is more expensive than the other. So the point is this factory production doesn't produce some things that actually make people happy. Right? The basic principle of economic development is centered on land and cows. The necessities of human society are food grains, fruits, milk, minerals, clothing, wood, etc. One requires all these items to fulfill the material needs of the body. Certainly one does not require flesh and fish or iron tools and machinery. There is enough milk, enough grain, enough fruit, enough cotton, enough silk, and enough jewels. Then why do people need economic development in the shape of tools and machines? Can tools and machines supply vigor and vitality to men and animals? Can machinery produce grain, fruit, and milk, or jewels and silk? Are jewels and silk, along with varieties of foodstuff prepared with ghee, grain, milks, and fruit, not sufficient for man's pure, luxurious, and healthy life? Then what is the need of an artificial, luxurious life of cinemas, cars, radio, flesh, and hotels? Has this civilization produced anything more than the dogish mentality of quarreling individuality and nationally? Has this civilization enhanced the cause of equality and fraternity by sending thousands of men into a hellish factory and the war fields at the whims of a particular man? Why? It means one may say that no, it's that you can see it, society is developing, right? You know, but let's say like gentlemen are from. Nasik. Okay. So that Bombay side, okay? Now, you go out into a village around Nasik, right? You go into an older village, established village, not one that's something new. And so basically people have houses, they have facilities and that. Life's simple, okay? Now let's say we go into Bombay, right? Where you have more fancy, more this and more that. And you could say, yes, the emerging middle class is doing very well. But how many slums do you have in Bombay? I think the only bigger slum is in SA. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's the only bigger one. But otherwise, Bombay is like, you know, Bombay and slums are synonymous. Though nobody talks about it. They try to make it, you know, Bombay and Bollywood. That's synonymous. You know what I'm saying? But the point is it's how you say? It's slum. So that's the results of this factory. The machines and all that, they're creating that. That's what's happened. So it's not that human life is improving. For a few, yes. But for the majority, no. It's getting worse. So that's the point. Is that the natural lifestyle that people had before is not there. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like this. Where is it? Because it's over on that side. What's it? Somnath? Yeah? Somnath? There's a place called Somnath over that side. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Somnath, the Mughals came, I think, 17 or 19 times and took everything in the place. Right? And by that, they are able to maintain their empire. One temple. And in those days, you're talking some hundreds and hundreds of years ago, 1,000 years ago or something. Did they have all this machinery and everything? No. So now, if you know the neighboring country came in and you know took all the you know how you say cars and slums of and mobile phones of Bombay, so then they could run a kingdom. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
Thanks a lot. Come again.
Yeah. I wondered how we're going to get rid of that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know. So that's the whole point, is that what has developed, what has gotten better? People think, no, it's improving. What's improved? In reality, what has actually improved?
Cheating propensity.
Yeah, that's it. Yes?
It appears that from the time of Srila Prabhupada mentioned this, actually it went down more, because now internet is an illusion within illusion. It's not even machinery. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah. And the worst part is your money's there. It also doesn't exist. Gold. You know, it's wild, the whole thing. It's just an illusion. I mean, I heard once, I don't know if it's, I'm sure it's still going on, but that it was one of the things on the stock market. You could trade shares in Michael Jackson. It's just a little, somebody just puts up, okay, we're putting out so many shares on Michael Jackson, you know, like that, and people start trading it.
Yeah.
There's nothing there, you know. So, you know, he's dead, you know. You know, but it's all it is it's just people are agreeing to. You know, it's kind of like the what do you call it? You know, out in Australia, you get the out there in the outback, and they get a chicken. And they start betting on it.
Oh,
yeah, cockfighting, but a chook raffle. Yes? Chook raffle? Doesn't make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so now there's nothing there. They got one chicken, and then all this money is all happening over this chicken. Or, you know, two flies are there, and one goes, hey, I'll bet you the one on the right flies first. And then it's the whole thing happening. So that's all it takes, is just people are willing to invest money. That's all the...
They do that with cane toads.
Cane toads. Okay. Which one's going to jump first?
Yeah, in northern Queensland.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Just get drunk and...
Yeah, yeah. So that, you know. I guess if you're farther out in the outback, there's no cane toads, so you only got flies, right? You know? You know, therefore the hat with the corks, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess the point is hopefully then appreciated. Use some examples that could be fully related to. No, he's all very airy fairy kind of
down to earth.
Yeah, down to earth, yeah. Why should man not be satisfied with grains, fruit, and milk, which combined together can produce hundreds and thousands of palatable dishes? Why are there slaughterhouses all over the world to kill innocent animals? Should not a king or executive head protect the lives of the poor animals who are unable to defend themselves? Is this humanity? Are not the animals of a country citizens also? Then why are they allowed to be butchered in organized slaughterhouses? Are these the signs of equality, fraternity, and nonviolence? Because Prabhupada's point is, you're saying it about the humans, but it's not actually there. It's only talk, right? Because the situations on certain levels have gotten worse. At the same time, we expanded into the animals and everything else. I remember here Prabhupada was here, and there were some banana trees that were going yellow because they weren't getting water. And Prabhupada called Bhavananda and Jayavataka Maharaj, and they said, you know, what's going on? You're in charge here. Why are these banana trees not water? He says, well, that's someone else's thing.
He said, you're not looking after the residents of the ashram.
Yes, you're not looking after the residents of the ashram. And they thought, you know, banana trees, residents of the ashram. They hadn't connected it, you know. And so then after that, then they were taking care of everything, you know. Because you only think just the people are the residents. But then you figure out that even the banana trees are the right. Therefore, in contrast with the modern, advanced, civilized form of government, an autocracy like Maharaj Yudhishthira's is by far superior to a so-called democracy, in which animals are killed and a man less than an animal is allowed to cast votes for another less than animal man.
Sorry, Prabhupada.
Yes. The modern elected executive head of a state is just like a puppet because he has no kingly power. Even if he's enlightened like Maharaj Yudhishthira, he cannot do anything out of his own goodwill due to his constitutional position. Because he's an elected person, he has to do what is his platform. Right? Therefore, there are so many states over the earth quarreling because of ideological differences or other selfish motives. But a king like Maharaj Yudhishthira had no ideology of his own. He had but to follow the instructions of the infallible Lord and the Lord's representative and the authorized agent, Bhishmadeva. The conception of one world state can only be fulfilled if we can follow the infallible authority. An imperfect human being cannot create an ideology acceptable to everyone, right? Because everybody will have a different idea, because it will fulfill a certain aspect of one's conditioning. But that someone else has a different conditioner.
Yes.
It's just like being, you have those who are just like, they like to be party animals. So then that's the whole thing, just doing that and everything. But there's other people that don't like to do that.
Yes.
Right? They're the ones that make the money. Right? It's not that you don't have a little social interaction, but just that you do it as an occupation, that you're a party animal. It doesn't make any money. Right? So that's the whole point, is that it doesn't actually create anything. So here is, you follow the concept that is given, handed down from authority, because man was going to always come up with something that works for him but not for someone else. So that's why you have to have the equality, is everybody gets what they need, not that they get the same thing. Does that make sense? That's the point. Equality means everyone gets what they require. Not necessarily what they want. Right?
Yes.
Because the point is this, the elephant requires one thing, the dog requires something different. So if you make it equal, it's not going to work out for either of them. Does that make sense? The businessman requires more, because otherwise how do you run a business? Right? The artist requires less.
Yes. They kill themselves to get more.
Yes. Yes. They didn't kill themselves anyway. Does that make sense? So the whole concept of it, because Krishna has created everything. He knows what man needs, what the animals need, what the trees need, what everybody needs. And so then if you run according to the rules, then it all comes out nicely. Like that. It all comes out well. And only the perfect and the infallible can create a program which is applicable at every place and can be followed by all in the world. It is the person who rules, and not the impersonal government. If the person is perfect, the government is perfect. If the person is a fool, the government is a fool's paradise. That's the laws of nature. We must look into the defects of modern civilization by comparison here. And should follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Yudhishthira to cleanse man and wipe out anachronism. Yeah. So in other words, in this age of where it's all about truth and openness, it's not actually. All it is you pick a few and then focus on that, and everybody else doesn't really apply it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, notice in the Bollywood movie, right, when somebody is not so well-to-do, because the normal thing is the guy who has to live in one of those big mansions, the double staircases and all those kind of things. Yeah? Yes? No? Right. Okay. Now, the guy who doesn't have much, he lives in just a regular little apartment that a middle-class person lives in. Right? The movie doesn't generally take place in the slums. Right? They already did that in Calcutta. Right? It's not going to work out again. Right? You know what I'm saying? So sometimes, but it's not. That's not the general thing. So the whole point is they're not really looking at it. Nobody makes that comparison. They only kind of focus it on this other area, and then no one worries about it. And so, yeah. Verses 7-20. Krishna departs for Dwarka. Sutta Goswami continued. Sri Hari, Lord Sri Krishna, resided at Hastinapura for a few months to pacify his relatives and please his own sister Subhadra. Afterwards, when the Lord asked permission to depart and the king gave it, the Lord offered his respects to Maharaj Yudhishthira by bowing down at his feet, and the king embraced him. So, in other words, Krishna was going to leave because the war was over. But then, you know, nobody was very so much happy about that, especially Maharaj Yudhishthira. So they went, heard from Bhishma, came back, you know, established him on the throne. He stayed for a few months more. See that everybody is, you know, everything's going well, nice, the devotees are happy, and here specifically his own sister was happy. Right? Yes?
The mood in Hastinapur is the same as in Varka?
Would be? It would be similar, yes. Same people. It means, where is Kunti from? Yeah, where is Subhadra from? Yeah, so it's the same, see. Yes?
One thing I really appreciate you is that you stay here in Mayapur to train us. But I see in ISKCON that the sannyasis, they go, they give a little bit of training, and then they move on.
That's also standard. I mean, you have both. Yeah. You have both, because you have to have those who are always moving through, your itinerant preachers.
Yeah.
Because then you on a regular basis, will hear something. And at the same time is that you also hear a variety of angles. That's vichar. So seeing the same thing from different perspectives.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's standard. But then it's also traditional that somebody will have a preacher has a seat where they sit at, where they can see that what they're talking about people are doing, so others can see as an example. Like that. So you have both. Like Madhvacharya had his seat at Udupi, the same time he traveled all over India. Or Ramanuja had a seat at Sri Rangam, or Melkote. And then she would travel around. So it's very standard like that. You know, Lord Chaitanya had his place, but he'd go out and travel. You know what I'm saying? So Puri was his place, but he'd go out, you know, and be like this. So both aspects are important. Like that. So you need both. Okay. Afterwards, when the Lord asked permission to depart and the king gave it, the Lord offered his respects to Maharaj Yudhishthira by bowing down at his feet, and the king embraced him. After this, the Lord, being embraced by others and receiving their obeisances, got onto his chariot. So, we catch what was happening there? Okay, it means that the senior equals in juniors. Okay? At that time, Subhadra, right, because in other words, it's brought out because it's the culture and the Lord's following that. So this is the reciprocation. That's why these would come out. Because remember, this is being described to Paramahamsas, right? So it's not about catching attention or anything like that. It's about, you know, what is of value, what is of use. So even amongst the Paramahamsas, the cultures, they still follow those things. At that time, Subhadra, Draupadi, Kunti, Uttara, Gandhari, Dhritarashtra, Yuyutsu, Kripacharya, Nakula, Sahadeva, Bhimsena, Domya, and Satyavati all nearly fainted because it was impossible for them to bear separation from Lord Krishna. The intelligent, who have understood the Supreme Lord in association with pure devotees and have become freed from bad materialistic association, can never avoid hearing the glories of the Lord, even though they have heard them only once. How then could the Pandavas tolerate his separation? For they had been intimately associated with his person, seeing him face to face, touching him, conversing with him, and sleeping, sitting, and dining with him. Right. So these great sages, just hearing about the Lord once, then they're feeling so much desire to be involved and have that association. So now, what about these devotees who have, you know, for months and months and months have been personally associating with the Lord? You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes you come down to a thing is that someone is sitting in some place. And so, oh, but why don't they come here? You know, like that. You know, they're always there. You know, we never get that association. But then the point is, yes, that's a consideration. But at the same time, what about the consideration of the others who always get it? Right? So you have both aspects to see. So both has their element.
It's the responsibility of those who are always getting.
It means to be Krishna conscious. Yes, everybody is to be. You know? But in other words, there are different perspectives about one thing. You know, in other words, getting the association of the Lord and the devotees. that. You know, in other words, those of getting that association, those of losing it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, both are the same. Because in any case, then they'll lose. You know, so it's the same thing that always goes on. Mm-hmm. What we're pointing out is that both sides are valid, not just one side. In his purport to 110.10, Srila Prabhupada describes the separation from Krishna in appealing words. Lord Sri Krishna is so attractive for the living beings, especially for the devotees, that it is impossible for them to tolerate separation. The conditioned soul, under the spell of illusory energy, forgets the Lord. Otherwise, he cannot. And so it's only under illusion, the power of illusion, that he can forget the Lord. Otherwise, he wouldn't. So how is he going to be the controller and enjoyer if he's always remembering the Lord? That'll be miserable. Right? In other words, so by the Lord's mercy, then because they want to be an illusion, then the illusory energy covers up. But then if they want to not be under that illusion, then he'll remove it. So it's simply up to the desire of the living entity. They want to get out, then they can. Right? The feeling of such separation cannot be described, but it can simply be imagined by devotees only. Right? So you give some indication, as we mentioned before. After his separation from Vrindavan, like it means we can tell about the, observable results of an activity, but you can't describe the experiential results of the activity. You know, it was nice, it was good, it was great. You know, but what does that do for you? How do you actually? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't, you know, so then you say it was great, and then you think of things that you thought were great, and then you'll compare the two. Mm.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, you know, like that. Yeah, well, you know, what do you have? Oh, it was very tasty. And then the person thinks of, yeah, back in Hong Kong we were eating some stinky tofu, and that was really tasty. So then, you know, it must be like that. Yeah.
Paneer, palak paneer tastes like tofu from Hong Kong.
Stinky tofu.
Stinky.
It's specifically called stinky tofu.
Okay. I tried to nice it up, but...
Yeah.
So we might be thinking we're doing a service to people to allow them, to let them in on some of the experiences they're going to go through, but they're never going to really benefit from it until they
do it. Yeah, means by hearing if they can make the connection. That's their point. Is then they've experienced it. That's why someone who comes in contact and quickly realizes things means they've been doing it before, right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like it meant these personalities, they've been doing all these pious acts and vows and vratas and sacrifice and austerities. They've done all those things in connection with the Lord. So now, just by hearing the name Lord, or hearing, seeing Him, they fully surrender. Right? So they've done. And then, because of that, the Lord's mercy is there, and then it works out very nicely. So then, but it doesn't mean that we don't try to give an indication. It just means that it will have to be experienced for oneself. Right? That's why it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when they're discussing up to a particular level, in that rasa tattva, at one point he just says, we've discussed all the positions and the things to look out for, but the actual taste we can't describe beyond this. You'll have to take up the process and experience it for yourself. So, but we think, because I know those facts, therefore I'm tasting that rasa. No, that's the facts. You know, that's like saying, yes, I know that there's this nice prasad on the table and there's all these different things and the setup and arrangements and all that is so great and fabulous and everything like that. And I can go on and on describing, but am I tasting it? No, that's a whole different thing. So that's the whole idea when you have these things of, so-called rasiks. They're describing all this and others are thinking, yes, that's wonderful arrangements. And they're comparing it to their mundane experience. And so therefore they think, yes, we're all rasiks here. But it's not. Rasik means it's you actually appreciate the rasa, like Bhishma did. He's appreciating Krishna driving the chariot for Arjuna. You know, he wasn't talking about something else, the Brahmastra or something. He's talking about the rasa. You know, as a Kshatriya they might talk about that, but as a devotee he's talking about the rasa. After separation from Vrindavan and the innocent rural cowherd boys, girls, ladies, and others, they all felt shocked throughout their lives. Right? So it means it wasn't just they were shocked at the moment, it says throughout their lives. They never got over the shock. Right? And the separation of Radharani, the most beloved cowherd girl, is beyond expression. So you don't even, it means shock throughout their lives. You can't even, that gives the general idea of the Vrajavasis, but for Radharani you can't even describe it. Once they met at Kurukshetra during a solar eclipse, and the feeling which was expressed by them is heart rendering. There is, it's just that somehow or another the brain was breaking. Here trending. And I was just thinking, what's here trending? Expressed by them, here trending. There is, of course, a difference in the qualities of the transcendental devotees of the Lord. But none of them who have ever contacted the Lord by direct communication or otherwise can leave him for a moment. That is the attitude of the pure devotee. In other words, it should be appreciated what's happening here. So, what was the point before of Kunti Devi? Why was she even considering letting Krishna go? Because as the aunt, technically she could stop him. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Right? So, the point was is that she knew how much the separation was, but she also knew how much it was in those in Dwarka from not having him there also. It means they're with him, they're about to lose that and go into separation. They're already in that separation. Right? So that was the reason she was thinking that Krishna should go. Right? So in other words, it both sides is going to work out the same difficulties. Thus, the Bhagavatam teaches how to reestablish our relationship with the Lord and awaken a longing for Him. Because what it means, how to establish, means by appreciating the devotees. That's how what Bhishma is doing. That's what the others in Sutta Goswami is explaining. Once this attraction for Krishna begins, as Srila Prabhupada states, quote, it goes on progressively increasing without stoppage. Like fire in gunpowder. It just gets more. It starts out small and then it gets faster and faster as it moves. Right? So we say, is of course, this attraction has begun when we contact devotees at the first stage, but it becomes that extremely dynamic, or say dynamic with time of ruchi. Right? Because then it starts moving very fast. Because then from ruchi, it's only two steps to Baba, right? So it goes very fast. But it's there from the beginning because that's why one comes to Krishna consciousness, because there's an attraction to Krishna. Sutta Goswami continued. All their hearts were melting for him on the pot of attraction. They looked at him without blinking their eyes, and they moved hither and thither in perplexity. Footnote 13. Srila Sridhar Swami translates, Viche lus tatra tatra, moved hither and thither, as following Krishna everywhere. Right? You know, in whatever it is, either physically or by sight. In other words, you move to whichever way is going to put you in some kind of proximity. You know, so in other words, they're all kshatriyas here, so generally they function by formality. But here it's just, they're just moving so they can somehow or another be in connection with Krishna. The female relatives, whose eyes were flooded with tears out of anxiety for Krishna, came out of the palace. They could stop their tears only with great difficulty. Because generally they don't come out of the palace. We've seen in previous times when Krishna has come like that and would go earlier. We had that here? That's in the Mahabharata. No, it's in Mahapara. It's because he's coming to Hastinapara, you know, so many times. You know, Indraprastha and that. So he's coming and going, but then there's that element of it's all going on. You know, so there's much less intensity. So the queens of the palace would stay in the palace. He'd go into the inner quarters, see them there, and then take their leave there. Then just before going out, then the men of the palace. And sometimes
he did that
He did that with Kunti. So that was there. So then they would be there. Sometimes they might come to that point, out of their quarters into the main part of the palace, but it's not public still. But then when they go out into the public, then we see it's just the Pandavas. You know, or just, you know, the Pandavas, Bhishma, like this kind of, the men. So here, either the queens came out of the palace. And so then in the palace, if they're crying, then no one's going to say anything. But coming out into the public, then you have so great difficulty to stop their crying. They feared that tears would cause misfortune at the time of this departure. Srila Vishnunath Chakrabarti Thakur explains, with great effort they stopped the tears, but the tears still flowed. They hid those tears with the edges of the garment in order to prevent any inauspiciousness from being seen. Right? You know, because it's supposed to be, you know, someone's going somewhere, you start, it's joyful, it's this, it's that, you know, like that. While the Lord was departing the palace of Hastinapur, different types of drums like the mridanga, dhola, nagara, dunduri, and dundubhi, and flutes like the gomukha and other instruments, like veenas and berries, all sounded together to show him honor. Out of a loving desire to see the Lord, the royal ladies of the Kurus got up on top of the palace, and smiling with affection and shyness, they showered flowers upon the Lord. 13-16. Srila Vishnunath Chakrabarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 1:10:16. They conveyed through their glances smiles, shyness, and love. You know, so all those things through the glance, right? We mentioned, we saw before, as Krishna is very expert at expressing emotions through the eyes. Yeah. You know, so the same quality that we see has been given to his devotees because of their affection. So they're also able to do this. Srila Prabhupada elaborates, shyness is a particular extra natural beauty of the fair sex, and it commands respect from the opposite sex. This custom was observed even during the days of the Mahabharata, i.e. more than 5,000 years ago. It is only the less intelligent persons not well versed in the history of the world who say that observance of separation of female from male is an introduction of the Mohammedan period in India, right? Because that's basically, that's like taking the words right out of the mouth of the academics, the modern academics. They're all going to say this. This all started here. No, it always was there. Because the point is that shyness is the respectable element. The shyness is the power. Like that. Does that make sense? It's the one thing you can use in public, because the women are more powerful than men. So in private, you can use the contrariness and the elusiveness, but in public, you use shyness. You can also use shyness in private. You know what I'm saying? But because it's a universal one, so that's why shyness is a particular extra natural beauty of the fair sex. Right? Yes. That's actually the point. This incident from the Mahabharata period proves definitely that the ladies of the palace observe strict parda, restricted association with men. And instead of coming down in the open air where Lord Krishna and others were assembled, the ladies of the palace went up on the top of the palace, and from there paid their respects to Lord Krishna by showering flowers. Right? So you get it adds more to it. This idea, no, you got to be right there. Then that means this one doesn't actually understand emotion, understand relationship. Right? It's a matter of all these things together create. So that's the whole point. So this modern thing, it doesn't actually create anything. It's not that you're improving the quality of interaction between the male and female. The more you break this down in the name of equality, you know, that's like I said, the elephant and the cat, you know, the dog have to eat the same thing and the same quantity. So when you make it equal for the men and women, does that mean that the men get 9 times more self-centeredness? Are they allowed? We're going to make it equal. They get to be 9 times more self-centered. Is that allowed?
No.
No. Right? So where's the equality? You know what I'm saying? How many pants are you going to buy? Right? But how many, you know, tops and tanks and shoes and bags and this and that are you going to buy? He gets one wallet, right? He wants another wallet, huh?
Maybe.
Yeah. But I'm saying, he gets another one? What's going on here? Right? You know? But more bags? Hey, that's the big bag. They need the smaller bag. But then the smaller bag, this is the fancy smaller bag. Then you need the kind of more sporty one that you can kind of wear out. Then you have the one that, you know, really don't care if somebody steals the bag. You know, and then all these kinds of other bags. Then you have to have the bigger bag.
Also,
yes. Then there's the colors.
Yeah. That multiplies all of these categories.
Yeah, so where is the equality? You understand? It's not being given. It's a trick. It's cheating. It's not real. It's not real. Right? So the point is here's the shyness is the power. That's what makes it work. So this restrictive was always there. So it adds to the flavor, because as you had all these things, then it adds in one thing to the thing, but the actual interaction is getting less and less and less.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
You know. The interesting thing is, it just struck me, is that if it's the opposite, the women want to be with the women because they don't want to be with the men, then that's considered more progressive. Mm-hmm. You know, because then there's a rasa that you can get there because the men don't understand. Mm-hmm. But the Vedic says start from there because the men don't understand. Oh, no, that's bogus, that's archaic. Mm-hmm. No, yeah. they go full circle anyway. Yeah. You know. Yeah. Yes, what to do. It is definitely stated here that the ladies were smiling there on top of the palace, checked by shyness. The shyness is a gift of nature to the fair sex, and it enhances their beauty and prestige. And those who are shy, then it enhances the prestige. In other words, amongst gentlemen, it's enhanced. Amongst dogs, no, that's another thing, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So the shyness is the thing. Is the thing. Those with qualities will appreciate that, right? You know, and there's no use in getting a dog for a husband, right? Is there a dog? Right? And even if they are of a less important family, or even if they are less attractive, right, it still enhances the beauty. Any girl who is shy, then no matter what the social status or even her personal beauty, it makes them more attractive.
Yes.
Right? That's the power. So that's why it says it's Krishna's special gift.
Isn't there something about keeping covered? That also
the head, and that's just part of that's a use of shyness. It's just part of the trick of shyness. Because I mentioned before is that they covered their how you say the eyes with the corner of their work, edges of their garments in order to prevent any inauspiciousness from being seen. Because you have that, then you can do things with it. You have more control. You know what I'm saying? If you're completely open, everybody can look at you. What can you do? But if you have your cloth, someone's looking, you just move the cloth. So who's in control? You know, the guys think, yeah, we're looking at the girls, but the girls are in control because they can, you know, whether you see or not, it's up to them. You know, it's just a lot. So in other words, there's a lot of Maya makes it reverses it so you think the opposite. You know what I'm saying? You think, oh, the girl who's covering herself like that, she's less in control. She's actually more in control. The ones that are out there, that's all. That's it. You know? There isn't anything else.
They've sold themselves cheaply.
Yeah, it's done. You know, okay, put a few curls in the hair. Maybe that's it. But then, after that, then what?
Get a tattoo.
You know, get a tattoo, yeah. But then the tattoos don't go away. And then you have to show the tattoo, right? You know, how many people put it on their hands?
No.
Right? You know, so therefore, you know, it just means then you always have to wear that kind of clothes, otherwise no one knows you have a tattoo.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so I'm just saying you restrict yourself. You say, no, I'm being free. No, you're restricting yourself. We have practical experience of this fact. A sweeper woman commanded the respect of many respectable gentlemen simply by manifesting a lady's shyness. Right? Probably mentioning there was this, we've all heard that story, no? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then that's the point, is that these were all gentlemen. Because she came, if she had just kind of come in and walked through, then no one would have even noticed. She's the sweeper lady, who looks? But because she came through shyness, like that, they all got up to move out of the way so that she could get through properly. You know, these are the guys who run the company, you know, or people who are coming who are, you know, on that same level, who are buying or associated or like that, and they got up for a sweeper lady, right? Not just a lady, a desk lady, a sweeper lady, right? You know, so that's the, you know, like in a company, the janitor's kind of on the bottom, you know, desk job's a touch above that, right? Like that. Half-naked ladies in the street do not command any respect. But a shy sweeper's wife commands respect from all. Human civilization, as conceived of by the sages of India. That means the half-naked lady in the street, more people will talk about it, but there's no respect on any account, anywhere. You know, that's the difference. You know. So that's the point. Being famous, you know, in the Shudra's mind, can be the prominent element. But that's why it's supposed to be Brahminical culture. So it's not these elements that are proper. It's not the age or the fame that's important. It's the knowledge, it's the characters, the cultures, the sacrifice. Like, these are more important, right? Mm-hmm. And then even bottom line, money. Okay, she's half naked in the street. Is she getting any money for that? Right? So she's half naked, and she's getting no money. What's the point?
Where's the upside?
Guys will look, guys will talk, but they're cheap. Like that. A sweeper woman commanded the respect. Okay, we did that one. Human civilization, as conceived by the sages of India, is to help one free himself from the clutches of illusion. The material beauty of a woman is an illusion because actually the body is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, etc. But because there is the association of the living spark with matter, it appears to be beautiful, right? Because of the potency of the soul. Right, therefore it appears to be. Otherwise it's just earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Right?
In all the right places.
Yeah, in all the right places. But the point is this, even if the soul's not there, it doesn't matter if they're all in the right places. You know, so like Michael, what was it? Matahari, right? She had all the, you know, mucus, bile, and air in all the right places, and they shot her anyway. You know Matahari? Right? She was the
German spy.
She was an English spy. So the English thought she was spying on their part. The Germans thought that. Then one day they figured it out. Then they shot her, like that. But she at the time was the most well-known society girl in Europe. Right. So even though she did have it all in the right places, still she ended up, you know,
dead.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
You just said potency of the soul. Does that mean that some souls are more potent than others, or does it mean that the soul was more uncovered, therefore exposing the potency?
It's karma, just how much is there. But the point is, whatever is there, it's only because the soul's in the body that then there's an attractiveness.
But why did it mention potency? What does that mean?
Says, because there's the association of the living spark with matter, it appears to be beautiful. So the soul's there, therefore the body looks beautiful. Take the soul out of the body, it's not so beautiful anymore. You know what I'm saying? How many people are talking about a dead Marilyn Monroe? Right? How many people talk about a live Marilyn Monroe? Right? There's still ladies today that dress like Marilyn Monroe. Right? But not a dead Marilyn Monroe. You understand? That's not attractive. Does that work? Okay, do this. Think about what's the actual question and ask it. Okay? Because right now it's just you're kind of leaving it open, which is all right in a general discussion. But in this you have to keep it focused. Okay? So when you figure it out, then... Okay. But because there's the association of living spark with matter, it appears to be beautiful. No one is attracted by an earthen doll, even if it is most beautifully prepared to attract the attention of others. The dead body has no beauty because no one will accept the dead body of a so-called beautiful woman. Therefore, the conclusion is that the spirit spark is beautiful, and because of the soul's beauty, one is attracted by the beauty of the outward body. The Vedic wisdom, therefore, forbids us to be attracted by false beauty. Because it's not, you shouldn't be attracted by that. It's because the soul is there. So in other words, the interactions between the two souls through the medium of the body, right? So how do souls interact with each other, right?
Yes.
Based on Krishna consciousness. But you use the medium of the body as the instrument. Right? But because we are now in the darkness of ignorance, the Vedic civilization, allows very restrictive mixing of women and men. They say that the woman is considered to be the fire, and the man is considered to be the butter. The butter must melt in association with fire, and therefore they must be brought together only when it is necessary. And shyness is a check to the unrestricted mixing. It is nature's gift, and it must be utilized. Okay. Otherwise, just everything goes, right? If it's lost. Oops. Okay. So then we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada ki
jai,
Jai Nitai Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki
jai,
Jai Nitai Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki jai.